Hey, everyone. Before we get to the show today, Ryan's got a little something going on down in Houston that he wanted to tell everybody about. Ryan?
Yeah, so we're really excited. Last time we had an event in Houston, it sold out and we had such a great time. But what we're going to do is an actual due diligence trip to Houston. It's one day. You can fly in, fly out the same day, Saturday, September 20th. We're all going to jump on a charter bus and we're going to go through and actually see how we do due diligence, select real estate, go through the purchase process. You can network, meet other aviators, meet other investors, and just have a great time. We're going to do this Saturday, September 20th in Houston, Texas. You can fly into IAH or Hobby, and we will meet at a site at around noon, conclude with a happy hour around 4 o'clock, and then you can fly out that afternoon. So if you want more information, go to the show notes. You can click to register. It's a free event, but last time it sold out, so run down to the show notes, reserve your spot today, and we'll see you in Houston, Texas.
Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea and Ryan Gibson here for another week of financial education. What's up, Ryan? What's going on?
Not much. Just here to talk about one of my favorite topics, how to find deals to invest in, private deals, and vet them. We're going to talk about that today. And we are also talking about like recent regulatory changes and how they apply to pilots, you know, what this new executive order 401ks is really going to mean to you as an airline pilot. Like, why should we care? And bringing in a great guest, somebody who's a top-selling author of a book about self-directed IRA investing and somebody who I've been following for years. And we're going to bring him onto the show. So I couldn't be in a better mood.
Yeah, this was a really fun conversation. Yeah, you know, this conversation is going to revolve around self-directed IRAs, but also the public markets versus private markets.
Yeah.
We just held our annual shareholder event. I guess as this airs, it would have been last week. And we talked a bunch about this executive order that just got signed. If you're not familiar with it, it was August 7th. And just the difference between what's happening in the public markets versus what's happening in the private markets and democratizing access to alternative assets, or what, you know, what has traditionally been called alternative assets that are these days turning into more mainstream investment products. So Matt Sorensen is coming to us from Directed IRA. You may remember Mark Kohler from Directed IRA. That was a really fun episode talking about taxes. This is going to be centered more around the IRA custodian side of the house. But Matt is just a wealth of information. Matt is the CEO of Directed IRA and Directed Trust Company, where they handle all types of self-directed accounts, IRAs, Roth IRAs, HSAs, solo Ks, and custodial accounts. He is also a senior partner at KKOS Lawyers, but no longer advises clients. KKOS Lawyers serves clients nationwide from its Phoenix, Arizona office. So Matt, just an absolute wealth of knowledge. Excited to get into it.
And all the lingo, if you're not sure what Tate was talking about, 401ks, SEP, IRAs, things like that, all that really means is today we're going to explore how to invest in these very lucrative private investments and how you can use your retirement account to do that. Maybe you have an old 401k or something from a prior airline or a TSP that you can roll in. We're going to get into that. And then also how to find and vet these companies like we're talking about and the opportunities that Tate laid out so perfectly with the private versus public market. So with that, let's get to the show.
Let's get to it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Matt, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Happy to be on. Thanks for the invite.
Absolutely. It's always fun talking about self-directed retirement accounts and what's happening in the market.
Yeah, I love it because it's where all the money's at. Let's be honest. Retirement accounts, there's like $44 trillion in U.S. retirement accounts.
Right.
It's like there's more money there than anywhere. So like if you're trying to learn like finance and how to optimize and build wealth, like if you're not talking about that or figuring that out, like you're missing out the biggest pot of money out there.
Absolutely.
Now, I've been following along with you for a long time. Really excited to have you on. You wrote the Self-Directed IRA Handbook, which I want to get into and just promote to listeners to go run and grab. It's a great book. It walks you through this, but there's been some like pretty breaking news with 401ks and Trump and another executive order. Can you kind of unpack why that matters to maybe a pilot and why now? Why do you think he's doing this and why is he making these changes?
Yeah, this is the 401k executive order and alternative assets, right? And basically Trump came out and said, it is the policy of the United States of America that every American should be able to invest in private alternative assets with their retirement account. And that's like groundbreaking, right? Most of us think of like your 401k or your TSP or IRA or whatever account you have. And you think of mutual funds, ETF, you know, stock maybe. You're not thinking about, can I buy some real estate? Can I buy the rental property down the street? Can I invest in a fund that owns storage? Can I invest in an infrastructure deal? Can I buy crypto even? Like you're just not even thinking about that with your retirement account. Well, there's two big components of why Trump did that. The first was, is he's like, these alternative assets are producing better yield than the stock market, right? Like the ultra wealthy allocate 80% of their investment portfolio to non-publicly traded assets.
Yep.
80%. The middle income America allocates 90% to the stock market, right? And it's like, well, what are the wealthy people doing? Well, they're taking advantage of these other investment options. And so what they're trying to do is saying, let's level the playing field. Most people who are what I would say this mass affluent, right? They're out in the economy. They might have $1 million of net worth or so. They've got money to invest, right? And they want to buy some of these other alternative assets or have some allocation to them. But where's most of their investable cash, especially like long-term wealth building cash? It's in their retirement account. So if you really want to let the mass affluent really affect everyday Americans who are trying to build and grow retirement, if you want to help them get up the ladder, so to speak, you've got to give them greater investment options. And you don't have to do it, but that was one big piece of the executive order, is Trump acknowledging that private assets can create a better yield. Let's at least give people the option. Don't invest it if you don't want to. It's your option and your choice, but at least let's give people the choice. And then the other piece of it, because that first piece, by the way, was about like the SEC. Hey, SEC, make it easier for people to do this. Let's stop gatekeeping and only letting the wealthy people in. Let's try to make this a little bit easier for people to do. The other piece of it was more like regulatory framework for the Department of Labor, because the 401k industry is terrified of private assets for two reasons. One is if people lose money, they don't want to get sued. So like your 401k administrator, or your 401k trustee is like, we better not let you do this because if you lose money, we're going to get sued. But if you lose money on a stock or you get like a 1% return for 10 years in that target date fund, you know, we won't get sued because it's so vanilla, you know. So they're trying to reset that fiduciary liability. And if people choose themselves to go invest in these assets, is not put liability on players in the system, advisors, 401k admins, or trustees. So that's really what it was all about. It's kind of groundbreaking because it's really paving the way for people to have greater investment options. If you look at like Australia, for example, Australia is one of these countries that actually, when you have their form of a retirement account there, you've always been able to invest in whatever you wanted. Small business, real estate, you know, a private company, a public company. They didn't get this industry that we got in America, which was just like buy a stock or a mutual fund, you know. And so they're trying to break that back up and be like, hey, let's let you invest in a private asset, which, by the way, you've been able to do from day one. You've been able to own a private asset in your IRA or 401k from day one. The problem was the systems and the regulations made it really tricky in a 401k. And that's what Trump's executive order is trying to bust up.
And to be clear, this is for 401ks at your active company.
Right.
So we've talked a lot on this show about taking an old 401k from an employer that you've separated from or a prior TSP, and you can roll those into a self-directed IRA. You can self-direct those funds. Or if you have a side hustle, you can have a solo K, a solo 401k, which you can self-direct. The problem is if you work at Delta or United or any other airline and you're currently employed, you can't take your, you know, the million or millions of dollars in that 401k while you're currently employed and take it and invest it in a rental property. But it's not to say that the IRS doesn't tell you that you can't do that. It's that the plan fiduciaries tell you that you can't do that.
Yeah.
I want to touch on a couple other things on this executive order that I thought were really interesting, because I did a ton of research on this ahead of our annual shareholder event, which took place, well, 3 days before we were recording this. In 1987, there were 8,800 publicly traded companies in the United States. And that number today is down to 4,300. Mm-hmm. So we're down 55% in the options that are available to you in the public markets. Jamie Dimon, CEO of JP Morgan, has voiced concern over this. The fact that there's been so much consolidation, there's just less choice in the public markets. At the same time, the number of private companies with over $100 million of revenue, so big private companies, has increased by 67%. And now 87% of all companies with over $100 million of revenue, so big companies, are privately traded. So are privately held, I should say. Uh-huh. So you've only got 13% of all the big companies in the US that are even on a stock exchange. So of course we should have access to these other big companies and to real estate deals and all these other things. And then the last thing I'll say is that you look at the smaller companies. Remember I said there's 4,300 publicly traded companies. There's 35 million businesses in the United States compared to that 4,300. So it makes sense. And
I love it, Tate. I use half these stats, by the way. I love this. Yeah. I'm like, keep going.
The one more thing I'll add is the difference between defined benefit and defined contribution. All you airline pilots out there know what a DB plan is. It's a pension. It's what we used to have. Then we went through this round of bankruptcies. All the pensions got dissolved, and we've all gone to defined contribution, which is a 401k. Well, guess what? 30% of assets within DB plans are allocated to alternatives, whereas 0.1% of assets within DC plans are alternatives. So this is the other thing is going, hey, all these pension funds are smart enough to be investing in alternatives. Why are 401ks being blocked out? So I'll turn it back over to you.
Well, and I will say one more thing too. Like, so we're talking about registered companies and unregistered companies, right? Registered companies are your publicly traded companies that are listed on the exchange and registered. And you're talking about unregistered is what Tate and I do, right? We're unregistered. Mm-hmm. We're not approved or disapproved by the SEC. Those companies are what run America. Small business is what runs America. And there are more unregistered securities in the United States than there are registered securities. It's been this way for a long time. And to Tate's point, it's only accelerated in the last decade. Now this is exciting, I think, but I also want to balance this with publicly traded companies are scrutinized, right? And they're registered. And there's a lot of month over month, year over year, quarter over quarter scrutiny that goes into publicly traded companies. And I know personally people who have taken their publicly traded companies private because they're under so much scrutiny. But maybe that scrutiny is protecting investors, right? So I do want to kind of play contrarian, even though I am selfishly like an unregistered company trying to raise money, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, like what's the balance here? Because, you know, Trump is probably a little on the side of, hey, let's like open it up to everybody. But also that comes with maybe some differences in risk, right? So would you mind kind of playing into that a little bit?
Yeah, let me work backwards because I think those you guys are both putting like different questions and perspectives on it, which I totally love. On the first one, on like, you know, the public versus private, and there are some protections in the public markets, is I'm not saying you should invest in the private market if you don't want to. I'm just saying it'd be nice to have a freaking choice.
Exactly.
If you wanted to. And if you don't, keep doing what you're doing. If you're like, you know what, guys, I don't want to go look at those deals or opportunities. I'm not interested in risking or building my wealth over there. You know, cool, don't. But what's happened is they've just said, everyone, you're over here. This is the menu you get to eat off of, and take it or leave it. The fact of the matter is produced paltry returns, right? Compared to some of these other private assets. And that's why the wealthy have been investing in private assets because they can, right? They're allocating the ultra high net worth or allocating 80% because they can, like it's open for them. And so, and it's not for everybody. Trust me, even like, you know, we own a self-directed IRA company, $3 billion in assets. Like we'll open 500 to 1,000 new accounts a month here, but it's not for everyone. Right. But it's for a lot more people that are currently doing it. So I think let's just like let people have a choice is my first. I guess I'm pro-choice on that since we're getting all political with Trump here. You know, different type of that. Maybe I shouldn't have brought that up. Okay. Like, who's this guy? What did he just say? This will get taken out of context. All right. Let's come back to the private, just like the amount of private companies out there versus public. I think that is such a critical point for people to understand, because when we're all investing, we're trying to buy at good value, right? I mean, that's the whole purpose, right? Buy low, sell high. So I want to buy something at a good value. Well, if you've listened to, like, you know, Warren Buffett and a lot of people, they think the stock market's like way overvalued right now. Well, why is it overvalued? Less companies going public, right? And more and more dollars pouring into it from retirement accounts. Let's be honest.
Right.
Like when you, some of those stats you cited of like how many, there's like twice the amount of publicly traded companies. What was that, like 20 years ago than there are now?
30.
Okay, 30 years ago?
A little over 30.
Okay, guess how much money was in US retirement accounts back then? Like maybe 5 trillion? There's 46 trillion now. So like that money is just flowing right in. And the only thing it can freaking buy is a publicly traded asset. And so it just is naturally inflating the values. And
that's such a good point.
If you're looking at a company, like a public company versus a private company, you're like, well, this company makes X return on their, you know, this company makes Y return. And if it's public, it's just got this inflated value issue to it, which is hard to know. How does that company grow? And am I investing right? You're really just looking at, is the stock market going up and down? Is overall values going up or down? You know? But if you look at a private company, you can say, well, I know it's making this much amount of profit. I can see its growth trajectory. You can invest at a different value proposition. And I think that's why, like, frankly, the whole private equity industry has boomed as well, is they've realized there's better value over here that we can generate and get better returns on our money. And I think for the mass affluent, I just use that term generally just to be like, you know, people making a few hundred grand a year that might have $1 million of net worth. Like, we just want to play in this. And I think that's like a lot of our client base here at our company, Directed IRA, is, and they may not go all in on it. You know, even the typical customer here, the average account balance is 160 grand, but they probably have a $500,000 in retirement accounts total. They're not all in on it. So I just think it's from a big picture standpoint, it's just like some people really should focus on. I like where they're going with the executive order, though.
I agree. I just want to give listeners a resource. If you're interested in this stuff, the Council of Economic Advisors put out a report. We'll link to it in the show notes. It's called Retail Access to Alternative Investments via Defined Contribution Plans. It's a 31-page report. It was interesting enough that we put it in our annual shareholder event, and it talks about all these things, and it's got some really interesting charts. And one of the things it also brings up is the fact that when companies IPO, they're usually past their prime growth phase. Like, they've already created all the value in the private market, and all of their investors got rich on the IPO, and then it dumps into the public market. And of course, there might be some growth over the next few decades within the public markets, but the vast majority of investors are losing out on these early years, or maybe mid years, of aggressive growth. So in any case, I'll turn it back over to you, Ryan.
I just heard a stat that blew my mind, which is $5 trillion in retirement accounts 30 years ago, $44 trillion today, but half as many publicly traded available companies. I mean, that to me is telling. I mean, that's a lot of money that just needed a home that went somewhere that inflates whatever values in a market. Like, there's one thing that drives valuation, and that's liquidity in the market. You know, the reason why college tuition has gone up so much, right, is because access to student loans, more loans, easier to get, driving up the cost of tuition. Same thing in any market, right? More money in a housing market drives up the cost of the housing market. So you have having this excess funding now be potentially open to go into more options will probably right size the market potentially. And I think it's just something that economically to really pay attention to. Matt, I'm curious though. So you run a self-directed retirement account company. And so for pilots who are just tuning in to the first episode, maybe, you know, what a lot of pilots don't realize is that they may have worked at a regional or in the military or wherever it might have been. And now they're at their major and they didn't do anything with that IRA account. And they don't realize that, hey, I can actually take that and roll it with Matt into Directed IRA, set up a retirement account, and then invest in things like real estate, like syndications, oil, natural gas, like all the things that Tate and I do in our respective companies. But I'm curious, though. So like this executive order now makes having their Fidelity account that they already have at Delta or United or wherever now be able to invest in these privates. So why would they need this special custodian to have the alternatives? And I'm sure you have an answer for that. Otherwise, yeah. I probably wouldn't be as excited about it. But what's changed now, or what's different there?
Yeah. Well, first thing on this executive order and 401ks and allowing private assets, that's going to take years before you see meaningful change there. So like, if you're like, well, I want to do this today, in your 401k, it's going to come down to some private fund options of what you're going to get, which is good. I mean, this is a step in the right direction. And those are going to be big funds, audited private funds, let's be honest. I think that's where you're going to see it settle. So, but it's a good roadmap, because I think then we can inch away at some of the stuff that I'm frankly more interested in. But I think that's like a good direction. Here's the interesting thing, though. There's less than $10 trillion in 401ks. There's $17 trillion already in IRAs. Like, a lot of people are surprised by that. The biggest bucket of retirement account dollars is IRAs. And you can get to an IRA, by the way, if you have that old 401k from the regional or whatever, you know, airline you may have been at. You have a TSP. If you have an old employer 401k or TSP, you can roll that to an IRA today. Now, once you get to IRA accounts, you can already buy whatever you want in it. Like, you know, I bought single family rentals with my IRA. I do private money lending with my retirement account right now. I bought crypto with my retirement account. I shot a video buying crypto when it was $2,500 per BTC back in 2017. It was like a research project for a client about, can I do this? And so I was like, let me try to figure it out. You know, it's another interesting one, just weird. Breeze Airlines.
Yeah.
Privately held. My Roth IRA owns stock in that. Okay. I've invested in it through a private equity fund that's one of their major holdings. It was actually like a SPV specific investment through that fund. That was the people that did JetBlue, the kind of leadership team. But like, it's not like me buying Delta. And this is kind of like the growth curve too that you were talking about, Tate, is like, so I position my investment into Breeze rather than buying, let's say, Delta, because I thought they had a better growth trajectory. Like, there's a lot more value upside Breeze can execute and become, you know, obviously they have a huge growth opportunity ahead of them. So, but I've invested a lot of other things. I'm an RV park, right? I have owned like 5% of an RV park with my retirement account. So like, these are all these assets that you can own with your IRA, like right now. You don't need to wait on anything. And that's where I mentioned, you know, we open 500,000 new accounts a month. And that's what everybody's doing here. Like, every 15 minutes, someone's investing in some private asset. It could be a private fund. It could be a direct asset like real estate, like literally like the duplex down the street, crypto, any of these things.
And to give, you know, anybody perspective that might just be tuning in, there are dozens of companies like Directed IRA. They're one of the good ones that you know, we're not necessarily recommending them or endorsing them, but we, you know, we try to have quality people on this show. So, you know, Directed IRA runs a great business.
Absolutely. We're the best.
But to give people context, there are many custodians that do this. There are, you know, your traditional shops like Schwab and Fidelity and TD Ameritrade, and they only let you invest in the public markets. And there are custodians like Directed IRA and many others that allow you to invest in the private markets. And you don't have to roll your entire TSP over. You can just roll a portion. You can have as many IRAs as you want. And I'll also just say that I'd say, Ryan, I'd be curious what your ballpark number is at Spartan, but at Turbine Capital, I'd say about 20% of all the money that we raise comes from self-directed IRAs.
We've had hundreds of people use their IRAs to invest, maybe even over 1,000 across our deals. You know, the other thing too that I think is really important to understand, and the reason why I would recommend Directed IRA to folks, is one of my key requirements in working with a custodian is they have to allow you to have a brokerage option, right? Because I think one of the main downsides to this is, to Tate's point, you're like, okay, I'm going to do Ryan's self-storage deal or Tate's Turbine Capital deal. I'm going to roll $100,000 out of my account from Masaba, Air Wisconsin. Well, those airlines are gone. Now let's use more SkyWest account, right? those are my two previous airlines. And I'm going to put it with Directed IRA, and I'm going to put it into this syndication. And then you buy it, and then that starts kicking off, you know, $500, $600 a month in distributions. And then you're like, okay, now what do I do with that leftover cash that's in this account that some of these IRA custodians or these custodians only allow you to do privates, right? They only allow you to do these non-publicly traded. So some custodians will have a brokerage option where you can just reinvest that $500 or $600 that goes back in into the, to the market, right? So it's not just sitting there doing nothing. And I think that's why, you know, that's one of my key requirements when you're trying to select which custodian to go to. I always make sure they have a brokerage option. It's really important.
Yeah. And I think that's good for anyone who is out trying to grow wealth is you want to have some default option, you know, like even if it's a money market, which you can buy here with your account, or you want to be in the S&P 500, whatever it is. Even I do that with my own account when I'm between deals, right? There might be cash just sitting there and I'm looking for the next thing. Let's have something available. You know, you don't have to go back to Schwab with it. I mean, you could, but we have the options right here to keep it simple. And there are, you know, there's 20 different companies out there, of course, just like anything, you know, choose the one that you think does a good job and knows what they're doing. I think like no one stands even close to us in my opinion, but but you can do your own research. So you just go figure that out. But I wanted to share this too, because we're talking about like pilots. So I was just thinking of this story because you mentioned my book, The Self-Directed IRA Handbook. And I remember a pilot coming into my office here. Like he actually like came to the office. That's kind of rare. And he brought a mutual fund prospectus with him. And he had he had probably about $700,000 in an IRA. Most of it was accumulated from a prior airline. And he was like, I just don't understand this. And he's like, I'm like, you know what? The lawyers that wrote it don't understand it. And they're just having to like, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's and say all this disclosure and all these reasons why you shouldn't invest in this thing. He's like, this was the worst. But he said, he's like, I'll never fly a plane without knowing everything. And I don't know what you guys call these things, the books on the planes, but he's like, I will know everything in that before I fly that thing. And he's like, I've got $700,000 I've worked my ass off to build, and I don't understand what I'm investing in. And I was like, and he's like, can I buy real estate? That's why he came to me. And he read my book and he's like, I understand it. He's like, there's a property of the walks over there. It was as simple as that. And he was just like so attracted to that concept. And he's got an account here. He's been actually a client even before I had my own company. But I think like this kind of like a little more control of your retirement and a little more connection to your money has really spoken to a lot of our customers too. Whether it is real estate or it's a startup. I mean, we have physicians too. Like I have this group, the Meta Angels, that are basically like physicians that invest in medical startups, you know. I have a dental group that I had a bunch of dentists investing in this company that had this like mouth guard, you know, because they like invested in what they knew. We have technology people. We had a lot of clients. We have, I shouldn't say a lot, maybe half a dozen clients IRAs invested in Snowflake when it went public. It was a huge win, you know, massive. These are like tech guys, you know. And of course, you know, Peter Thiel, and you know, he's the famous one as the $6 billion IRA, like a tech guy investing in startup tech companies. Shocker with his Roth IRA. So it's like invest in what you know and what you feel connected to, I think has been like a big shift in people where you're like, man, I've got a lot of money here set aside. I want to feel connected to it. I want to feel like I'm investing what I know and where there's value. So I think that's been a big success and a draw for many people to do this. I said earlier, it isn't for everyone, but if like any of that speaks to you, I think you should be looking at this as an option.
Definitely. Yeah. Can we talk about the tax implications of putting assets into an IRA? Because our listeners, you know, if you've been listening to this show for a while, you're familiar with the tax benefits of real estate, familiar with K-1 passive losses, familiar with oil and gas and the incredible tax advantages of investing directly into oil and gas. Obviously, you know, people have cash to invest and they might have IRA money to invest. And when they're thinking about how to optimize what to invest in with their IRA versus cash, how do you think about that?
That's a great question. It all depends. And I'm a tax lawyer by trade. Like that's how I got into this, was from a tax angle. And then, so there's kind of two things. You have to look at this in two different ways. Because think of like a lot of pilots and many of you listening, you might have $500,000, $1 million in retirement account dollars. Well, you're going to invest that in the thing that's going to produce the best yield possible, period, right? Like the goal of that pot of money is to have the biggest account when you hit 59 and a half or whatever, whenever you want to start drawing down on it. So to me, the only thing I'm thinking about is total overall return. Because if I've got 500K there and my goal is to get that at 2 million in the next 15 years when I want to start pulling it out, and I'm at 500K now, well, I just want the best return possible net, right? Am I going to get that in the stock market, an exchange ETF, target date fund, mutual fund, whatever I'm doing in the public market right now? Or can I get that by self-directing into some other asset? So I think for that, just look at total return on that bucket of money, okay? Now let's think about, all right, Matt, I have 500K of money outside my retirement account, and I have 500K in my retirement account. Now, how do I invest? That's a little more complicated because of the tax rules. So I just want to set that as a stage, because some people will say, you shouldn't buy real estate with your retirement account because you don't get to take depreciation losses. And if you personally buy real estate, you get to take the depreciation losses. And guys, I'm a tax lawyer. I love tax benefits all over the place. But if my retirement account was getting a 8% return in the stock market and I can get a 15% return in real estate, why do I care about not getting depreciation? Like, it, I don't care about that. I just want return to grow that bucket of money as fast as possible. Then when you look over here, and this is what we do, you know, my law firm, KKOS Lawyers, we advise clients to and get a good like tax advisor that can help you on this stuff. We even have our alternative asset summit. I don't mean to be like promotional. I'm just saying about this. We like advocate on this type of stuff.
I was actually just looking up the date of your alternative asset summit.
Yeah.
When is the date? Can you tell us about it? We'll put a link in the show notes to it.
Yeah. AltAssetSummit.com, October 16th and 17th in Scottsdale. We're here in Phoenix, 2 days, and it'll go over all these different asset classes we've talked about. A lot of real estate, commercial, we have oil and gas, crypto, precious metals, private equity, venture. Maybe even I can get Ryan or Tate on a panel, maybe even, you know, we'll see. October 16th and 17th.
Ryan Sudeck is going to be there too, right? I just talked to him yesterday.
Yeah. Do you know him? Okay. Okay, cool.
He told me you'd put me and Tate on. So we're good.
Okay. All right, cool. All right. Let's talk. Seriously. But the reason I mention that is if you learn these asset classes, like we actually have a lot of IRAs that invest in oil and gas. And there'll be an oil and gas speaker. There'll be two of them actually at this event. And when you're investing in oil and gas, right, there's that IDC, intangible drilling cost. Well, that's a style of oil and gas investing. That's not the only type of oil and gas investing.
Right.
And if I'm looking at my 500K buckets, 500K of cash, 500K in a retirement account, if it's an IDC oil and gas deal, intangible drilling cost, it's more exploratory where you get to take a huge amount of your investment as a loss to offset other income, which is one of these rare things where your investment losses. Yeah, income. It's pretty awesome. I'm saying do that with your non-retirement account bucket, of course. Okay. But a lot of IRAs here invest in just more mineral right productions, like working, like the IDC's gone on that deal. It's already working well. It's a more guaranteed stream of income, but it's higher than what they can go get in their ETF or mutual fund. And they're saying, well, I want total return in my retirement account. I want to grow that thing to be bigger when I hit 59 and a half. So for those people, we see a lot of oil and gas investors using an IRA just doing mineral rights with their retirement account versus IDC outside their retirement account. Real estate's a little more tricky because the oil and gas is a little more simpler because IDC helps everybody, right? Like IDC, I could be a pilot, a lawyer, physician. I invest in oil and gas under that IDC. It can go against my ordinary income. I don't care if you're a W-2 earner, you're a business owner. Boom, that's helping me on my 1040 today. But if I'm getting real estate losses and I'm a pilot, that doesn't help me. It offsets other real estate income, but I can't take it against my W-2 or a business. And so I think real estate back probably is like the most common asset in an IRA in one form or another, whether they own their own single family rental, they're invested in a private fund or syndication that's doing real estate, they do private lending on real estate. Like that's what I do with my account the most right now. I'm just a private money lender, but it's going to other real estate investors and I get a lien or deed of trust on their property. But I lend at 12% interest in 2 points. Like I lend 6 month term loans. I lend it twice a year. So I'm getting a 16% overall return each year, you know? And so I'm just looking at total return. So I don't know, every asset has a little different angle you can look at it. But I think if you focus on your retirement account and you're thinking of that bucket of money on its own, we're always just like, what's total return? We want that to be as big as possible when we want to start drawing on it.
Fantastic.
Sorry, guys. I was a lawyer that billed by the hour. I can like, you're like, wrap it up, Matt. Jeez.
Matt, you mentioned, you know, finding better alternatives to invest in and, you know, doing this inside your IRA. And you mentioned some of the returns you're making. And I know you're well connected because you run a custodian and you have conferences and you're sort of networking. How do you vet what investments that you make? Like you personally, like it sounds like, you know, you did Breeze, you did private lending, you're in RV parks. Like how do you go about picking or finding your investment opportunities through your IRA?
Yeah. So two things. I'm always looking at what's the deal and opportunity, right? So in any of those deals, like the RV park, for example, like I'd never invested in RV parks before, but I dug in deep into their financials. What's their track record? Like what did they see in that RV park business that I thought was interesting? And they had a good angle on it, right? They're like, we've owned some of these before. We're bringing a hospitality aspect to it. And because they had some hospitality experience, the operators of this, and we can drive more revenue out of these things. There's also all these mom and pop operators of these RV parks. They're getting at great values. And so they kind of had a good little playbook on it. And I also kind of like just spoke to me of like going to the RV park. A lot of these are like next to lakes and stuff. And there's a big family component. And I feel like it's something that's going to be lasting and actually have more demand over time. But then the other thing is like, I'm always looking at the people. Like who's the people doing this? Like you look at like Breeze, for example, right? Like that deal is like, I have no idea about the airline business, you know, but like I was drawn to that because the people, like they were like proven winners, right? They're like, we've done this three times. It's like, okay. Like, I'm like, so who are the people behind it? Do you have confidence in them and their ability to go execute on that vision that they see and that opportunity? And I think if you can match those two things, and this could be, guys, this could be a single family rental. All right. Like that was the first deal I did in my retirement account. $80,000. I bought a single family rental in Indianapolis. It was a real estate broker friend of mine buying properties out there. When he was buying them, okay, that was 85 grand. It was renting for 950 a month. And I was like, that's pretty good, right? Whenever you can get, you know, that much rent, 950 on an 85K, that's pretty dang good for monthly rent. So, and I just known that like back of the napkin number. I am not a real estate or investing wizard, guys. Okay. I'm just like not. But I knew this real estate broker client. He was pretty successful, had a lot of raving fans. He referred me his clients over the years. And I just knew he was a good operator. So he connected me with the right property manager, the one that he used. And I sold that property, I bought that probably actually 4 to 5 years later for 185 grand, right? Great return. And by the way, the rents, I was charging $1,300 a month rent by the time I sold it. But he just knew where the right markets were, where there's going to be good appreciation. If there wasn't, you at least had stable cash flow. But that was just a little deal, right? Little 85,000 single family. But it was the same thing. Like, did you believe in the thesis of it? Which to me was maybe there's upside appreciation, but at least that cash flow I can count on. And that's a pretty great cash flow number on a single family rental. And then I felt like I had a good operator in property management. So that's what I'm looking at. And I do the same when I'm lending now. It's a little simpler analysis because there's less room for error. You can just be the bank and get a lien. And is there enough equity?
That's excellent. And, you know, I mean, when people say, you know, I don't know, you know, private markets sound risky. It's like, you know, you're in first position lien. You're lending money at 2 points and 12%. It's like, show me how that's riskier than your money sitting in the S&P.
Yeah. I mean, it's only, I mean, I guess like, it's, I think it's, I'm trying to think the best way to explain this is like, if you think of whatever you're buying on Wall Street, like, okay, think of like a fixed index fund or a bond. That's a whole bunch of loans combined. That's thousands of these little loans I'm just talking about here combined together. It's de-risking you because now if one of those goes bad, it's not as big of a deal. So there's less risk. But you're getting less overall return. And there's a ton of fees going out to Wall Street to bundle that up, right? Like probably like half of the profit is going out in fees. But if I can go source that deal and just do the one and get the good ones, obviously you can't make dumb investments, of course. But here, and I'm willing to take a little bit of risk because there's better reward. I get rid of all that money going off the table in the deal, you know? And so And that's the same thing with private equity, right? Like, is like, you know, these mutual funds and ETFs are like 100 different stocks that they put together. Well, why does it not lose money? Because they put so many together that they don't make much money either, you know? So you have to be willing to have that individual risk reward versus aggregating a bunch of stuff together. So, and I think like that's where like real estate's been super popular, is because when you lose on real estate, you don't lose bad. I mean, you could over leverage the hilt out of it, which people, it's kind of hard to do that in a retirement account, but you don't really lose big on real estate. If you're investing in startups, you know, and I remember we had one of the speakers at our Alt Asset Summit, she did ran Tech Coast Angels. It's like an angel investing group. And she said, when you invest in 10 companies in the venture startup world, 9 of them will go bankrupt and fail. And it was like, everyone in the room was like, she's like, but the one that wins goes 100x. And that's the game in that space. So every one of these different assets has a little different risk reward profile, different some tax things. It's just fun. I think it's like fascinating to learn, actually. And I think for people that want to be connected to their money and their investments and like that, it's an area where you put your time and knowledge into it, you can really have the payoff too.
So three things, right? One thing that you mentioned was you understand you get to the opportunity to understand the investment, right? The guy that came in, he had the thick piece of, you know, the prospectus and he didn't understand it. He's got all this money. He understands his airplane, doesn't understand his investments.
Yeah.
The next thing you said was the underlying opportunity business plan was well understood and believable, like in your RV park. You know, they had undermarket rents and things like that. And the third thing, which I think is the most important thing, is that the people that were running it were not just nice people that were easy to talk to, but they had the experience and the know-how to do what they're doing. So just to kind of put a bow on, you know, how do you find your investment opportunities? I would use that as a playbook, but personally. One thing you didn't say was, I go look and for the best possible return. Right. Because, you know, that's not where you start. You start with, do I understand the business? Do I see the opportunity in their business plan? And then do the people that are at the helm really understand it? And I think that was pretty consistent in all of your things. And of course, that leads to good returns and potentially capital preservation and any downsides that the headwinds that might come in and on those deals. But I do think it's just important to kind of summarize that, because I think too many times people just chase, you know, the fancy, flashy thing and they skip one of those things and then they're surprised when it doesn't work out. Yeah. I think that's just so critical. So sorry, Tate, I know you're jumping to get it.
No, I was just, you know, I like that you summed that up, because when people are new to this, and I think that bring that back to this executive order, is that there's going to be a learning curve here. You know, when this stuff kind of works its way through the system. And that's why, Matt, I think your perspective on it is probably accurate, in that it will be a big private fund. It's not going to be that you're going to be able to go and invest in, you know, one of our deals through your 401k. That's probably not where it's going to land, because they want to protect the little guy. They want to protect people from making a mistake. And when people are new, they might say, well, this one has a 17% return and this one has a 13. So I'm going to go with the 17. And you know, when you're evaluating private market opportunities, you really need to read between the lines. And, you know, the PPM is going to tell you all the ways it can go wrong. And the offering memorandum or the executive summary is going to tell you all the ways that it can go right. And you kind of want to look at both and balance them and really read between the lines and create your own thesis of whether you think that the business plan is achievable and who's running the ship. So in any case, we have no idea where the stock market is going, but I do, you know, taking it back to Warren Buffett, Warren Buffett has a great litmus test, which is total stock market cap divided into GDP. And that's at all-time highs. So the stock market, you take the price and the shares outstanding, and that's your total market capitalization for the stock market over GDP. And it's high right now.
Interesting.
So I have no idea where it's going, but personally, yeah, this is why we have this podcast, is because we love alternative investments. And if you follow what the ultra wealthy are doing with 80% in private market alternatives versus the public equities, you know, that says something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a great metric. I wrote that down, total stock market cap to GDP. I'm not surprised. That's at all time highs right now, sadly. But I think sometimes being kind of the counter, going counterculture to everyone else, so to speak, is where you actually make money. And I think that's where the opportunity lies for investing. It's not easy. It's not complicated either. I'll say that, you know. You do have to go find these investments, but that's where you start networking. You start meeting people. You start listening to these types of podcasts. You guys may have events. I have events, you know. Like, I don't, and it's weird. A lot of people are like, well, my biggest account has $400 million in a Roth IRA. And you're like, what's that guy investing into? And my next biggest account's about $100 million. They're doing totally different things, okay? Like, it is not even close on, like, what they're doing. And so everybody's got a little different thing of where you can build wealth. But I think once you get to these private assets, there is opportunities there to build real wealth. Analyze the deals properly, of course, and make sure you're weeding out any of the people just trying to make money off of you instead of making money with you. But I think once we get back to the self-directed IRA concept, is it just takes opening the account, getting it funded, and then finding that investment. It's three steps. Our team helps with just getting it open and funded. A lot of people are like, this sounds complicated. I called up Fidelity and I said, I want to buy real estate with my IRA. They said, I can't do it. Yeah, that's because Fidelity doesn't let you do it. Like, you can buy it with an IRA, just not a Fidelity IRA. So you get over to a self-directed IRA. There are other companies out there. Ours is directed IRA. We're the best. But then their job is just like help you like open it and just the easy mechanics, which is not painful. But then it's go finding those investments. And I think if you have that desire and you like that process of being connected to your money, you can find a lot of success. We also have quite a bit of advisors too that have their customers' accounts over here, and they're just managing their clients' money into private assets too. But the vast majority is people that want to quote unquote take control of their retirement. That's our trademark. They want to be connected to it, invest in these assets that they know and believe in. And the nice thing about that is you get the satisfaction when you win.
Yeah, real quick, you said something that I think is a differentiator that I had not understood or known. You said, you know, typically custodians, when you set up these types of IRA accounts, the custodian's going to tell you it's do your own deals.
Bring your own deal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but you mentioned something, we have advisors to help you with private placements. Can you kind of elaborate on that a little bit? That's something I wasn't familiar with.
We have a number of financial advisors that send their customer accounts here. So like there's a number of advisors. Some of them will be at our alt assets, some on our panel, and they just believe in alternative assets. Like I'll give one, for example. I remember this one was, this goes back to all these themes we've talked about. This advisor came up and he's like, I got this anesthesiologist in Tucson or up here in Phoenix, and he wants to buy 5% of a surgery center with his Roth IRA. And this advisor's like, I've never done this before. I found your book. How do we do this? And I helped him do the deal. Well, the cool thing was, one, this surgery center became very successful and it was a great investment for this client's IRA. But this advisor came back to me and said, I have to tell you that one investment was the best thing I did in my career as an advisor, because that anesthesiologist tells every doctor friend of his how he invested in the surgery center with his Roth IRA. And everyone's like, you did what? And he's like, I've got so many client referrals from that guy doing this one thing. And I think advisors are starting to get like attuned to this. It's like a big differentiator because they're feeling this like, where can I get better returns for my customers besides just putting them in the same stuff everyone else is selling? And they're also like, how do I meet my customers where they're at? They want to do this stuff. They're like begging. And this advisor got dragged into it, but he was like, oh my gosh, why was I not doing this earlier? He's got 100+ accounts with us now, you know? And so typically your financial advisors just want to do the easy thing. Let me just click some buttons and put you into this. But there are some good ones out there that are really trying to help clients get better overall returns, and we'll do that legwork and have learned these kind of alternative assets too. So most self-directed investors do it on their own, but there's still some advisors out there you can work with if you need to.
Well, Matt, we want to be respectful of your time. This has been extremely enlightening. I like that it's been a different angle than a lot of the previous IRA conversations that we've had. If you're looking for more nuts and bolts on how this stuff works, you can go back to some of the previous episodes. But Matt, if people want to start a directed IRA account,
yeah,
how do they get in touch with you? How do they start the process of rolling over a TSP or an old 401k or an existing IRA?
Yeah, just get over to directedira.com. You can book a call with our team there. They'll help walk you through the process, hold your hand through it. You pretty much need to do an e-sign application online. and then we run with it. And then if you want to learn more too, I mean, we have webinars, resources, conferences, the number one podcast. I wrote the number one book. Like, we have everything, a YouTube channel. Like, if you want to go deep on this stuff, which I know a lot of pilots do, like, you know, and it's like, that's why I literally wrote the book. I wanted the book as a lawyer to help my clients when I first heard about this. And so if you want to kind of really dig into it, the book is used by regulators in the industry. Almost every company in the industry buys my book to train their employees. So it really is the industry standard too, if you want to kind of beef up on the rules. So, but we're here to help. And thanks, guys, for having me. I love talking about this. It's a great conversation. I got to have you on our podcast.
Would love to come on.
We need to talk.
And we'll link your handbook in the show notes.
What's the name of your podcast again, Matt?
I got two, you know, why not? We got the Directed IRA podcast. That's all about self-directing. And then we got the Main Street Business podcast, which is more about business, tax planning, wealth building, asset protection.
Incredible.
Well, thanks for being such an industry titan in the space. Love your stuff. And thanks for coming onto the show.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.